Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Film Pigs podcast. We're doing another bacon episode for June of 2023. Steve Falk is very busy striking and taking care of his family. I am unemployed, so I'm available. And Steve Skelton has graciously put aside a time for this nonsense. Hi, Steve Skelton.
Hello. Yes, I have a very, very hard out. My schedule is so packed.
Okay, what's the hard out time?
About 5 minutes.
5 minutes from now. Okay, we'll try to get through as much as we can in a fiver. Because this is a bacon episode and we don't prepare really, we're just going to do basically an elongated what have you seen lately. But before we start talking about these movies we've seen lately, I do want to say that like the whole Barbie thing has started to upset me.
Why is it Barbie upsetting you?
It just, everyone's so very excited about this Barbie movie and I'm confused and I feel lonely and lost.
So you're mad other people are enjoying things.
Yeah, no, I just don't understand. Yes, that's correct. I mean, if you want to distill it down to its essence, yes, I'm mad that people are having fun while I'm not. And I just... But it's not that I don't want them to have fun. I just want to understand.
You just don't want them to have fun if you don't think they should be having fun because you're not having
fun.
No,
they should have fun, and I want them to have fun. I just feel left out because I don't understand what's fun about it. That's all.
You don't understand. You're just not getting Barbie.
I don't get Barbie. The Barbie thing. Yeah. But I'm excited that they're excited, but maybe part of the reason that I'm jealous is because there's a fucking Indiana Jones movie coming out this week, and I'm not excited. I'm going to go. Are you going to go this weekend?
To Indy? Yeah, probably not.
Probably not. You're going to wait for video or are you going to see in the theater?
Yeah. I'll probably wait for streaming because I still have to see Spider-Man. I haven't seen Spider-Man yet. So yeah. Spider-Man's top on my list for if I'm going to go to the theater.
Yeah.
So I'll probably go see Spider-Man like tomorrow or Saturday.
But you don't even want to see Indiana Jones in the theater anyway. Sounds like.
Well, I'm not excited enough by it to like, you know, drag my ass to a movie theater and sit through it. I might end up doing it, but what really sucks is the fact that there's an Indiana Jones movie coming out and I'm not excited about it.
I guess that's what triggers my sadness. About
your white hot seething rage at people who are enjoying the imminent Barbie movie.
My unreasonable rage towards people who are excited about Barbie is because there's literally a movie that's ostensibly just for me coming out.
And it's so rare that movies are made just for middle-aged white men.
We're really a lost kind of.
it's there's so few.
They've really kind of forgotten about us. it's all straight to video fucking Chris Hemsworth movies for us. I wish I was more excited, but I think I'm still going to go see it probably. Like I'll see a matinee of it. I might.
That's like a movie that I go when it's playing. If I like, I want to go see a movie, then I'll go see it. But it's not like, Indiana Jones is coming out. I gotta make sure I make time to see it. Whereas like the Spider-Man, I'm like, shit, I haven't seen it yet. I want to get in and see that on the big screen.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't seen that. What's her name? Jennifer Lawrence movie where she's naked and has sex with a kid. I haven't seen that. You'd think I would have seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. That's your demo.
That's my thing. The R-rated sex comedy. And here I am not going. I don't know what's wrong with me. I think I'm depressed.
Well, I mean, it's like we're kind of in an era of movies where it is there has been a lot. It's all like big tentpole-y, comic booky kind of stuff, and that's kind of the rule rather than the exception. So things have gotten a lot more kind of glossed over, mm-hmm. it feels, in like big major releases. So you got to find stuff.
I mean, I go to B-movies still, but like every now and again, but I find them just as disappointing at this point. So it's hard to get excited. Like, I didn't go see the new Gerard Butler movie in the theater. I saw a plane in the theater. That was unnecessary. You know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah. It's like I guess the places that I have gone consistently for entertainment in the movies have, for the most part, you know, just kind of abandoned my sensibilities.
Well, but you know what it is, though? It's because they're like some of these like so-called like mid-range movies, like the Gerard, they're still pretty high budget compared to, you know, that category of movie, how it used to be. Like, that category movie used to be like a $20 million movie.
Yeah, now it's like 60 or 70,
but,
right?
But like a plane is like a 60 or 70, and it's just like, no, we need to go back to the under 30 million.
Well, and it shouldn't. Shows. The truth is it shouldn't cost that much to make a movie that looks like Plane, whether you like it or not.
Right.
It doesn't look like anything other than a straight to video movie from the
90s. Yeah, I mean, Plane does not look like a $60-70 million
No, movie. Like, where did that money go? Is it all Gerard Butler's? Yeah. Is, you know, I mean, maybe it
I'm
is.
I'm guessing it's a good chunk is Gerard Butler, and a bigger chunk is probably international marketing for that because that's don't even, you know, that's
they don't normally include marketing in the budget of a film, do they?
Well, there's the reported budget, but then you double that for what you typically spend on marketing.
Right.
Right. So if they say they spend $40 million on the movie was budgeted for $40 million, you know, they really spent $80 million when you factor in marketing.
Yeah. I still don't understand why Ghostbusters 2016 is a bomb and Ghostbusters Afterlife gets a sequel, but it must have something to do with budgetary stuff. Because 2016 Ghostbusters made more money at the box office than Afterlife.
Yeah.
On paper. Yeah. And so if you reconsider Afterlife's box office with inflation, it made even less money. But it gets a sequel probably because they spent less money on it, I guess?
Probably less money, because I think like Ghostbusters 2016, I think, spent too much money.
Mm-hmm.
I think that actually was its biggest problem was misogyny, but I think like production side, I think they had too much money.
I
think that was the disconnect between the 2016 kind of side reboot and the original. The original was like much lower. The original was a mid-budget movie. And so it was all of the effects and everything were really scrappy, and they had to be very deliberate about all of their visual effects, whereas the 2016 one had lavish visual effects.
Yeah. I like them. I like the 2016.
No, they were really, really, they were really well done. But for me, it was just like, that was like a tonal thing that I thought was, I just thought it was a choice that didn't work tonally, was
too much money. The effects being too good didn't work for the movie.
Well, too good, but also too set PC.
Yeah, yeah.
There were too many action-y set, like it turned into like a Marvel movie.
Yeah, and it's sort of forgot. Like,
the charm of the original is they're idiots who don't know what they're doing, and they fucking wreck anything they come in contact with their technology.
Right, right.
They like destroy this hotel ballroom. Like they burn it down, and that's what's kind of fun, because they can barely control what they're doing.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. So
I think it's like they went into like a lot of like they just spent a lot of time really doing these big choreographed kind of action sequences that I just was like,
what's kind of great about
they're well done, but I just didn't think it didn't like connect with me for like,
I get you. I liked it mostly because I thought it was funny, which I don't think is true very much about Ghostbusters 2, and I definitely don't think it's true about Ghostbusters Afterlife. There's like no jokes in that movie. But I
thought, yeah, after the weird thing about Afterlife is, and you know, I mean, I think Afterlife probably got its sequel greenlit because it feels safer to the suits because it's mining the nostalgia mm-hmm. of what well, was.
And they're also trying to a younger audience by making it like seem like an episode of Stranger Things, which
yeah, exactly. But yeah, what I thought was so weird about Afterlife was, as long as we're just gonna riff on Ghostbusters, that was even more disconnecting for me than, you know, the slick action of the 2016 Ghostbusters, was just the fact that it was like, okay, the original movie and the sequel and Ghostbusters 2, I mean, they were comedies first and foremost. They were goof around comedies. And also 2016 was put its face forward as a comedy. Mm-hmm. And Ghostbusters Afterlife put itself forward as like a almost kind of like Spielbergian E.T. kind of adventure.
Yeah.
Like nostalgia thing. Like it wasn't a comedy first. And I don't understand. I mean, it was too reverent of the source material.
Yeah, I agree.
Which was, in the source material, was goofy, and that's what made it fun.
Yeah, and I thought
and the taking it so seriously and just dripping with the nostalgia just did not function for me at all.
Yeah, and what I liked about 2016 was not, and I think that, you know, it makes sense to have a problem with the third act because, you know, it does get, I like this cool looking, but it does get bogged down in special effects, and they sort of forget about the comedy. In the last part of that movie. But leading up to that, what I like about it is they're funny. They're just being fucking goofy and yeah. weird.
Yeah.
I like that. Anyway, let's stop talking about old movies. Let's talk about what you've seen lately. Skeleton, what have you seen lately?
I've seen more old movies lately.
Well, that's fine.
Although I did watch Extraction 2.
I did too. Let's talk about that. How was that for you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was like, it was exactly what I want out of an action movie because it was ludicrous. Like, and even though I complain about it, I even kind of appreciate the action movie that does the annoying slow burn
mm-hmm.
start in act mm-hmm. one of just the reluctant hero. Mm-hmm. The absurd recovery of Chris Hemsworth's character from the end of the first movie where he clearly died. and they're just like, eh, he just was hurt real bad. He's okay. Look, now he's out in the woods chopping wood. if you're like, I'm going to sit down and watch Extraction 2, you've already bought into that excuse mm-hmm. and you're fine with mm-hmm. it. And I was. Mm-hmm. But it did, you know, as is often the case, Act One drags you through. Like I'm recovering, but I'm so tired. Yeah, it had to justify
its bullshit.
Yeah, and you're like, no, just have him start stabbing people. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah,
I agree with you.
Let's get to it. But once they get to it,
yeah,
it delivers because it is like as soon as the action starts, it's mostly nonstop and pretty bananas.
Yeah, it's good. It's entertaining.
Yeah, and you know, and there's the great, like the whole prison break, extended kind of Warner style sequence, was really fun and crazy and just clearly just like that was. Must have just been madness to coordinate.
Yeah.
And so I really appreciated, you know, like that's the kind of stuff like, cause even though it's like, it looked like a Warner and it looks like they mostly did either they managed to do a full Warner or they did a series of very long takes that they cleverly stitched.
Yeah.
But even if it's that, it was still a really impressive sequence.
Mm-hmm.
Some really, just fun, crazy action in a prison gone mad. And it just keeps escalating, getting worse and worse and worse. that was fun. And then the train sequence, I thought was good too. And what I read about that, which I thought was pretty interesting, was there's actually apparently like a lot less CGI in that sequence than you think there is.
That's interesting.
The helicopters are, for the most part, apparently real helicopters. And at one point, I read an interview with the director. I can't remember the director's name, but he said, "Yeah, we had one take with the helicopter where it came down and dropped people on the train and then flew off. And it's a real helicopter. We really did it. It's not CGI, except we did one take where the pilot did it so perfectly that we couldn't use it because everyone's just going to say that's CGI. It's just he comes down, boom, perfect, and everybody's off, and he's up and gone. Like, there was no shimmying or weirdness. Like, it was just a perfect, like, landing. So that he said that we actually used a different take because, like, we couldn't use his perfect landing because people would just go, that's not real.
Oh, that's interesting. The pitfalls of modern action filmmaking.
So I think, you know, I think it would be interesting to see like an Extraction movie, and maybe they'll get it with Extraction 3. Cause I'm pretty sure I think that's already kind of in production now, I believe.
Pre-production. Basically, yeah. Netflix said before they even released this, yeah, we're doing another Extraction.
Yeah. Well, because that's Idris Elba is introduced as the mysterious new handler character to kind of push the franchise along. But
doesn't he have an Apple TV movie coming out too?
I think it's a TV show.
Is it a show?
Apple show? I don't know if it's a movie or a show.
Is it a hostage show?
I think it is like a hostages on a plane show.
And it's a series?
I don't know. Look it up.
I saw it. I just assumed it was a movie.
I think it's a show. But what I was saying was with Extraction, like, you know, the one thing where it kind of fell down for me was when it did use CGI, you know, it was, you know, clearly like, okay, the available CGI studios were probably finishing up like comic book movies, and we've got 3 days to do your train crash.
Yeah.
And that's it. And so, like, you know, like the train crash is like, you know, when there's some of those big crashes where it's like, okay, there's the CGI. That doesn't look super good. but I'm like with like Extraction, it's so much fun. Mm-hmm. That you're like, okay, fuck it, I don't care. Like,
well, you do.
I think
if a movie is fun enough, you forgive, effects that don't quite work. My favorite example of these, and it's like, I feel like if I'm gonna go see this Indiana Jones movie, I have to get in the headspace that I'm really going to see a sequel to Stephen Sommers' Mummy. Because I love the Mummy.
First Mummy, Mummy 2.
Mummy Returns, like not Mummy so much, too. But you know what? Because
I like Mummy too.
Because time has gone by, I would rather watch The Mummy Returns than a lot of movies that I've seen recently. And I also would rather watch the third one where Maria Bello is suddenly Rachel.
Bello replaces Rachel Weisz.
They're fun. That's the thing, is they're fun.
Yeah.
And even when the CGI is kind of like taking over the whole screen and it's ridiculous, you know.
When you get like that like Scorpion Rock.
Yeah, the Scorpion Rock or the Yeti in the third one. The Yeti.
The Scorpion Rock though in the second one is the kind of like the go to of like bad CGI.
It's bad. There's a lot of
like it was like okay, I've only got like 3 hours to do this effect, yeah. And I only have access to a Tandy.
and there's like the volcano and all the little creature things that are in the jungle, and it all looks like total shit. But at the time when I first saw it, I was disappointed because it's not as much fun of a movie as the first one is. It's kind of it's kind of a mess.
No, but Frasier and Weiss have such good chemistry. Yeah. I mean, they have. I mean, the reason you like that is because they've come the closest to kind of recreating the Marion Indy chemistry from the Indiana Jones movies.
Yeah, exactly.
But with different character types, mm-hmm. which makes it fun and kind of its own thing.
That's true. Well, she's a little bit more bookish than I guess Marion was.
Well, yeah, but she's a little more bookish and knowledgeable in academic versus Marion's kind of street smarts. But they're both very strong, kind of commanding people.
Right, exactly.
So, they end up driving a lot of stuff.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. I'll tell you the first my what have you seen lately that I saw in the theater. I went to see The Blackening.
Oh, how's that?
Disappointing, I gotta say. Oh. It was just sort of a one-joke movie that never went as deep satirically as it should have. And as a result, it's sort of repetitive and dull. There's too much like character interplay and not enough horror happening. And if the character interplay was funnier, maybe that'd be okay, but it's not. Like the movie doesn't, like it couldn't decide whether it wanted to be a horror comedy or a horror parody. You know what I mean?
Okay.
And as a result, because it didn't make those choices, and I'm a white guy, so why should this, I'm not necessarily meant.
Yeah, you're not the, not the you're target not the audience.
So maybe, I don't know, you'd have to ask somebody else. But for me, that's the way it felt. I mean, I liked that the movie existed. I thought the trailers were great. And I'm very happy I went to see it because I would like to see more movies like this. So glad to lend my support there. But just as a movie, ultimately, not awful. It's not awful. It's just not, it just didn't have the, either the comedy or horror oomph to it for me to go, that was awesome.
Like right.
Great horror comedy. It's just kind of okay and slow in too many parts. It felt longer than it was. It's just, and I think that's tonal, but also just not writing to the things they should have written to. There was, too much character and relationship development and not enough at a certain point. I mean, cause it's your joke. So it's just, we don't need to go deep into relationships. We need to go deep into the satire and the story, if that makes sense. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I'm certainly not regretful about it. And I do not hate it. I don't know if we talked about this last time. Fast X. I feel like we did.
Yeah, I can't remember. I can't remember if we did or
didn't.
I can't remember if I saw it before or after the last.
Yeah, I think podcast. Maybe we didn't see it until after the last recording. But in any event, let's talk about it. If it's a repeat, I apologize. I guess this is free.
I don't think I don't think this will take long. I have not nearly as much to say about Fast X as I did about Extraction 2.
Right. So when you watched Fast X, like, you streamed it. I streamed it. We did not go to the theater, which is like, this is the first Fast and the Furious movie that
this is the first Fast one. Yeah, that I didn't feel compelled to go to.
I missed none of them. I saw Tokyo Drift in the theater. None of them. But it was Fast 9, to be honest with you, that made me not really care about seeing it.
Yeah, Fast 9 was kind of like, okay, Fast 9 felt like they kind of run the premise out of gas
and jump the shark. They sent Tyrese and
Ludacris into space
in a car. I mean, and that wasn't the weird thing about that whole thing is it wasn't that much fun. It was just like, okay, You know what I mean? It wasn't like, what? Yeah. That's crazy. It wasn't even so dumb. It
was awesome. Yeah, there wasn't even like, the sequence itself wasn't bananas enough.
Yeah, it was just like, it would be enough to put these guys in a car in space and we'd be like, ah! But we weren't. And, you know, as a result. Yeah.
We were like, oh, they're in a car in space.
Yeah. Mm, okay, fine. What next?
I think the franchise, at least creatively, has kind of run out of steam before they're wrapping it up, which isn't unusual. That happens. So it's kind of like, you know, I didn't hate the movie. I didn't like the movie. It was kind of neutral for me.
Yeah, it was
for the most part. I think the main reason I didn't bother going to the theater was, and it's the same thing. Problem I have with the fucking Mission Impossible movies too. Now it's like I'm tired. I'm already just tired of these like two-part franchise finale movie things. Just make one big fucking movie and let's like.
Well, I didn't even realize they only announced that very shortly before I saw the movie. Like that wasn't a thing that in the marketing. It was just like Fast 10, and in a lot of ways, it was like this is the last one. This is the finale. But then after it came out, they're like, well, it's a finale in three parts. It's going to be three parts plus a Hobbs movie in between parts one, Fast 10. And what do they think are
calling that? Wait, the fast thing isn't two parter. It's a three-parter?
No, it's a three parter. It's a trilogy finale. Plus a Hobbs movie in between this one and Fast 10.5.
No, you're making that up. It's two. It's just two.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard.
From who? Who did you hear this from?
I read it in the press.
Oh, no, you're making
sure. No, I'm not. I could be wrong, but that's what I read, that it was part
of
Fast 10.
You could be right, I think, because that's ludicrous, again, no pun intended, enough to be true.
Yeah.
The last information I had, it was a two-parter. Like the Mission Impossible, but it's like their Fast franchise is doing it, Mission Impossible is doing it. You know, it was annoyed me back when Hunger Games and Harry Potter did it. These like big pop culture franchises just don't do that. Stop it. Just either make one big movie or don't.
Well, and in this one too, spoiler alert, everybody, the cliffhanger ending is so, I mean, on one hand, it's the over the top CGI nonsense that we've come to expect from this franchise. But it was so lackluster. I mean, it was so huge and gigantic and ridiculous and over the top and unbelievable, which is what I kind of want from a Fast and the Furious movie.
Yeah.
But it was so, it just felt so uninspired and obligatory. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, them driving the car down the dam, running away from a, you know, a waterfall or whatever, you know, and then they get, I was like, this is not that fun. It's not fun. You guys, 1 to 10.
Yeah, no, there was something about it that is like, they've had to go so big with their goofy set piece premises that it feels like it's gone just a bit too far, where you're just like, eh, okay, fine. Now I know everything is completely like cartoons, and it's there is no, you know, because at least like, even though like there was all CGI dragging that safe around Rio, which they reused all that footage from the first freaking 20 minutes of Fast X, that at least felt a little more visceral and like it could be real versus driving down the face of a dam, like outrunning a fiery explosion, which does not feel real even remotely in the slightest.
Well, and at least with the safe in part five, it's like smashing so much, and granted it's all cartoon, but it's smashing so much infrastructure, you know, in a recognizable city. So I don't know, just going down a dam.
It's just like, I mean, and they tried to call back to that with that rolling giant ball bomb.
Right. Right.
But it didn't work as well. No. It wasn't as cool as dragging a giant bank safe between two cars.
I mean, I felt like the other thing about that movie is, you know, there's only one plot line that made sense to me, and that's Jason Momoa wants to torture and kill Vin Diesel. That's all that made sense to me. And then all the other characters are doing all these weird things, and Jason Statham shows up and kicks some people. And it's always nice to see Jason Statham show up and kick a bunch of people and do the Jason Statham thing, because it always looks brilliant, and he's acrobatic and wonderful, you know. And it was nice to see him for a few minutes. But like all those obligatory cameos, and like nobody seemed that interested. And the only person who seemed to be having any level of engagement with the project as a performer was Momoa. But he also was.
I think John Cena.
Oh, Cena was good. Too. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah. He was. He like brought in some energy for me that was lacking. And I did think I did like the Michelle Rodriguez Charlize Theron fight scene. That was a good fight.
Sure,
scene.
Yeah, that was good.
But you're right. Like everybody else is just feels like we're just kind of hitting the numbers to wrap this thing up.
Yeah.
And
Mimosa's being over the top child as the bad guy.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that was the best choice for a bad guy. And it might have been if the rest of the movie had matched that energy, but it was like he was a ball of energy in a movie that was mostly lifeless. So,
yeah.
So then it, like after a while, because he had so much screen time, it became like, really? What is Momoa doing? What movie is he in?
What is this? What is this plan?
I want to see his movie. Let's turn this around. I don't care about Vin Diesel. He looks like a pile of roast beef in a shirt. He's scary looking. He'll kill you. He also looks miserable through the whole movie. That's the thing about Vin Diesel now. I mean, he like takes himself so utterly seriously, and it's sort of what worked about the old movies, you know. And I refer to myself in the third person type of actor. And he's a meathead, and that's fine. But in this movie, he also seemed like uninspired by his own badassness, and therefore, you know, I lost interest. Does that make sense? It's just.
Yeah. No, it is. It's the. I don't know. I think it's just it feels, at least for me, the premise has kind of run its course.
Yeah.
Again, no pun intended. But so it's just like, and I've loved the franchise. I've had a tremendous time with it and think it's a huge amount of fun. But I think it's, it would have been nice if it would have bowed out already.
Yeah.
But as is the case with like successful things like a movie franchise or a TV show, you know, if you're still making money, they're still going to make more, whether it's, you know, holds up or not.
So, I mean, I was surprised up through part 8 of how much I still enjoyed the stupidness. And I think that
and that's a hell of a good.
That's
run.
A very good run. 8 with a thing that start that really starts about a guy going undercover with a street racing.
And then turns into like now they're international spies. Espionage.
Great.
People.
Great.
That drive. Like, I mean, really, they should have like after 8, they should have 9 should have been. A reinvigoration of the franchise, making it even bigger and dumber, and it should have crossed over with Transformers.
That would have been cool. The other thing they
like
could have done
fast turning into Fast Farmers. The franchise turns into Fast Farmers. Then you've got like new life into both.
Vin Diesel's already
can you imagine?
Played a robot to great effect. So there's no reason why he can't be a Transformer as well.
No, he would still be Toretto.
No, but there should
they
be
would
a
all
car,
be driving transforming
there
cars.
There should be a car that turns into a giant robot that looks like Toretto,
a giant Vin Diesel,
and they talk to each other.
No, it's a car that then turns into an Iron Giant.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, exactly.
But can you imagine? But like, how much fun would that be to have like Diesel as Toretto, like talking to Optimus Prime about how they have to, how they have to like stop the Decepticons and whatever stupid human villain is part of the mix.
Do you think Vin Diesel realizes he has that old man thing that we all have now under his chin? That like hanging down, you know? We all have it.
Yeah. You know?
But he has it. It looks really big on a movie screen.
Well, or on my TV screen. That's...
I don't know. It's just, I don't know. I don't think he's embracing his age. I think he should get a better sense of humor about himself, is what I'm saying.
Well, good luck.
I don't know what I'm worried about. What else have you seen, Skelton? Anything?
I have done a couple. Rolling back the clock, looking at some old movies, I watched a couple of older Denzel Washington pictures recently. One of which was Flight.
Yeah, I was thinking about rewatching that. Should I? Because I remember thinking it was so dumb.
It's not. I mean, I can't. It's not great, but I think his performance is really good.
He's the drunk guy who flies a plane upside down.
Yeah, no, he's the pilot who like he like you know. Has the spectacular.
That premise alone is ridiculous.
Yeah, right. Because
but we're supposed to take it seriously the whole time, which is kind of why it worked for me. But I don't know. Is it going to hold up on the level that I enjoyed it the first time, or is it?
I mean, it's like, again, it's like, it's the material is like, was it like early 2000s, I think, like it's a Zemeckis early 2000s. So, you know, it's got that kind of sheen of still kind of like, you know, big Hollywood movie premise.
Right. It's a high concept, but it's a high concept drama. That's the thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a high. Yeah. So it has this like insane plane crash sequence. That's quite a bit of fun.
Very good.
And then most of the movie is, you know, the aftermath of that. But yeah, there is some really incongruous stuff with John Goodman's characters, like his Dr. Feelgood, who always shows up like to Sympathy for the Devil playing is his soundtrack, which is just like, look, there's a short list of like rock songs you should stop using in film and television. And Sympathy for the Devil is quite possibly number one on
I think it's because if John Goodman and Denzel Washington are in a movie together, they have to repetitively use some Rolling Stone song. Because that was true about Fallen. They played Time on My Side, which is a much better, like at least less.
Played. It's not quite as over. It's not as over.
And I think it's a better song. Yeah. I think Time on My Side is a better song than Sympathy for the Devil. But anyway, I just think they felt like, oh, well, they did Fallen. So we have to do Rolling Stones.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't say it's a good movie,
but it's entertaining,
but I kind of. Yeah, I found it entertaining, but I also thought his performance is like he gives a really like it's a unusually nuanced, well, not for Denzel Washington, but for what you were like the movie itself is kind of a little soap opery in its presentation. So, but his performance is a lot more. It's not as melodramatic,
right,
as the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, so he's doing some really interesting work in there, just in terms of like. the type of person he is and the type of flaws he has that I just think it's actually a pretty underrated performance.
Because the movie
is so melodramatic.
Yes.
And then the other one, which is a little easier to talk about the melodramaticness, I watched was Virtuosity.
I watched that recently too, because it's on
with Russell Crowe as the serial killer AI. And boy, that's a fun one, because that's like what, like 95?
That's right
in the zone of like your Johnny Mnemonics and like just like a few years before Matrix really upped the game for like your cyberspace kind of tales.
Yeah, and Denzel Washington
Virtuosity's
also doing a lot of B movies. Like he did, that was like Mighty Quinn and what's the other the one with John Lithgow and Ice-T.
Shit, I can't remember.
Like it was like it might have been the same year as Virtuosity, but it was around that same time.
Yeah.
Like really wildly entertaining, but you know, it's dumb.
I wouldn't say like it's a very dumb movie. What I love about it is it's steeped in that early mid 90s cyberpunk sheen, but where like all of the graphics and effects are terrible. So they're all very like Lawnmower Manny. In there, like, you know, because it's this nascent graphics like stage in technology where it's like now we're starting to be able to do some cool looking things, but they will not age.
Nope.
This isn't like Jurassic Park, where the dinosaurs are definitely going to age well over time. This didn't age well during the span of time the movie was
like Lawnmower Man didn't look good on opening day.
Yeah. And so Virtuosity is exactly got that same kind of stuff and you know these giant chunky CRT monitors with like the cyber looking programs on them but are really just like these bad user interface like 3D buttons that look so aged.
At least they were trying.
It's so
like great. I see sci-fi movies now, you know, like straight to video ones where they have fucking tube monitors and it's, you know, like old school.
Well, and that's like I said, when I watched Dead Space, again, the 1991 Bryan Cranston, Mark Singer starring, but Bryan Cranston's in it. Super low budge. You know, like a $20 budget sci-fi movie where it's just, you're just like, you can
it's
see
like a,
spray painted, you know, styrofoam cups glued to the
walls. I'll bet it's one of Charles Band's production companies.
I think it might be, yeah. But like yeah, so that one was, and it's a 72 minute runtime that feels like Lawrence of Arabia.
Isn't that great when a 70 minute movie can feel that?
Really just. What I loved about it though was like, Mark Singer is the lead, and he's some kind of space commander. He commands space. He answers this distress signal. Like he's like some kind of space policeman of indeterminate jurisdiction, in space, who answers this distress signal from this research.
He's a rogue
on this planet somewhere.
A rogue space cop. Rogue.
He's a rogue space cop. but. So he answers this distress signal because this lab has created this virus that turns into a monster. But the thing is like Singer shows up. Like this is supposed to be a science fiction movie, but he's clearly wearing his own clothes because he's got like a tomato colored button down, just a kind of a Banana Republic leather jacket, like a Lone Star from Spaceballs, and khakis. He looks like he's like going to the country club for some golf. But he's in space and he's got a robot, and stuff really annoying. It takes forever for things to happen, and then he eventually wins. Bryan Cranston dies.
Oh no. Just like in Godzilla. God damn it.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't make it.
But
Mark Singer does feed his corpse's head to the monster.
Oh, that's dark.
But no, there's a good plot reason for it. It scared me at first, but it actually makes sense.
Okay. Well, thanks for going through that 72 minutes. So the rest of us didn't have to.
Ugh.
Hey, can you hang on a sec? I want to get some tequila.
All right, but what else are we talking about?
I have more movies.
Oh, Okay, all right, go ahead.
Do like an ad. Do an ad for.
I'm not gonna do an ad. I'm not gonna vamp. Just like hurry up. Just hurry up. This is an ad for people who drink too much tequila, and who should probably get help. Get help, tequila people. Get help. We're also looking for other sponsors. Maybe through some Google ads. If those are still a thing. Although something I just read made it clear that Google ads are just a huge fraud, apparently. And gee, there's a surprise. So I think Google's ad revenue might be in a little danger. Oh, and now we're back. All right.
How'd the ad break go? Was it good?
It went so well. You should have been here for it.
All right, I'll tell you the other. Is that all your movies? Was that the last one?
That's all my movies.
All right. Here's the other things I watched, or at least tried to watch. I watched a movie. I think it was on Hulu. I think it was Hulu. It might have been Netflix. One of the streamers. It's a horror thriller, heavy on the thriller, called Influencer. Have you heard of this?
Influencer. I have not heard of this.
Yeah, it's about a lady who's traveling and she befriends another lady, and then you slowly realize that lady she's befriended is crazy. And I don't want to give too much away, but it was actually, it's like a lot of, because my wife has her horror movie proclivities and I'm very supportive of that. So we watch a lot of these. We're always looking for something new, and it's hard to find new stuff that's actually engaging, especially when you're going through the streaming low budget world. So much of it is just, and I don't want to shit on indie low budget filmmakers at all, but it's just like, there's gotta be a way where you can make this more entertaining and not wildly slow. But Influencer is not like that. It's well acted and it's well written. It's got a creep factor. It's got budget constraints that sometimes you can see, but they get past them, and it's genuinely kind of creepy. And if you like that kind of horror thriller vibe, it's a fun ride, I would say.
That's cool.
So I would recommend that one, but I don't want to say too much about it because like the twists in it are good. So I don't want to say that, but I will say I like the twists. They work for me.
All right, nice.
I tried to watch Air.
Oh, the Nike.
Yeah.
Thing.
And I couldn't. I got about 30 minutes in and I was just like, I don't give a fuck. I just don't care. I mean, I'd love to. I'm not saying it's poorly acted. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with the movie. It's just like, conceptually, I don't give a shit about wooing a basketball prodigy or whatever you call him at that stage in his career into an ad campaign for a struggling sneaker. And the concept of making marketing executives like
heroes,
underdogs,
underdog
heroes. They're the scrappy marketing executives, because this sneaker sucks. It's like, what? I don't fucking care. I mean, these guys are making six figures out of the gate. I don't give a shit about their underdogness. So I shut it off because I just found it really dull. But people tell me it's
great. I did watch Blackberry.
Oh, and how was that?
I enjoyed that. That one was fun.
Like Tetris?
Yeah, it's kind of more in the. I mean, it's not as like Tetris takes more liberties.
Yeah,
and because it's its own different kind of thing. Blackberry's a little more kind of straightforward documentary, style.
Okay,
and that same kind of.
But it's different. A different thing.
But it's got a manic energy to it that is.
But those are that,
so it has a comic.
Those
bent.
Are. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but those are more movies about tech development than they are about marketing the tech.
Not exactly.
I mean, there's marketing involved, obviously, yeah. But I just mean the marketing isn't the focus. The marketing people aren't the heroes of the story. The developers are the tech.
Well, I think I think in the case of, like, you know, like, Tetris is more got, you know, the heroes. I don't think Blackberry's got, like, protagonists, but I don't think it paints them as heroes. Mm-hmm. It treats it more realistically, you know, because the Glenn Howerton, you know, is the opportunistic business CEO who gets in.
Of course he is.
And yeah, and actually drives the company for a while, but is also crazy. So, you know, he's part, you know, he's a big part of what was the success and the failure.
Right, right.
So I wouldn't say,
well, the other
I wouldn't say anybody's presented as the hero. They're all pretty, all the characters are pretty flawed and
yeah,
pretty like over the top ways.
Right. But I mean, it's like, I watching Air, I was immediately reminded of Moneyball, which is a movie that I walked into going, people were telling me it was great. And I was like, how can this be interesting? I don't care about baseball and I don't care about how baseball makes money. I just don't. And I found that movie wildly entertaining and I really liked it. So I was like, with Air, I was like, well, maybe this is, you know, Moneyball for basketball and sneakers or whatever, but it just wasn't. It just wasn't that. It didn't have any.
No, it feels like everything I saw about it felt like its take was, let's really kind of celebrate the success of this shoe.
Yeah, I just.
And that was that was the story, right? Whereas something like, you know, I think like your Tetris and BlackBerry have more interesting stories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In how they came to be, because there's a lot of, you know, while again Tetris takes a lot of dramatic liberties to make a big crazy movie, the core of it is the how this guy managed to thread the needle of the licensing rights with the Soviet Union for this game at this time, and then get Nintendo to bundle it into the Game Boy, and like that's really pretty interesting. It's an interesting, crazy story. And then the rise and fall of BlackBerry, like, is also like super interesting, because it's like they were the biggest communications company on Earth until iPhone just said, "Hi, I'm iPhone," and stabbed them straight in the throat. And they were not prepared to deal with it at all.
Is the movie BlackBerry as good as the jokey bit sketch, the BlackBerry?
It's, I think it's in the zone. Yeah.
All right. I got two more. I'll just blow through them real fast so we can wrap this thing up. I watched the Netflix sequel comedy movie Murder Mystery 2 with Adam.
Oh, was that the Sandler
Aniston one?
I kind of enjoyed the first one.
Yeah. And Murder Mystery 2 is exactly the same.
That's good.
It's a perfectly reasonable way to spend a couple hours on a Sunday afternoon when you're recovering from a hangover and you have to watch something with your family, so it can't be too offensive. Yeah, it's totally fine. I mean, I have a soft spot for Adam Sandler. I freely admit it. I like some of his worst movies, and I admit that they're not, you know, good. I just enjoy them just because there's not enough dumb fun in, you know, comedy movie making anymore. And, you know,
yeah.
And Pixels killed his theatrical career, even though my son loves it. So he's making all these crappy Netflix movies, and most of them have been pretty bad, even for me. But I did like the Halloween, Hubie Halloween. It was enjoyably stupid.
I did not see Hubie.
You know, if you have any like or love for things like Happy Gilmore and Billy Madison and those kind of early ones, Hubie Halloween is the closest you're going to get on that.
Really? Yeah. That's interesting.
Murder Mystery is like Adam Sandler trying to be more grown up within his comedy, which is fine. And Jennifer Aniston is always pleasurable, even though her forehead doesn't move anymore. And that's, I wish it moved more because she's funny. And she's funny even without, you know, forehead movement, but I think she would be funnier with it, is all I'm saying. The flaws notwithstanding, it's a Netflix streamer. So I don't know what you're expecting going into it, but if you like the first one, then this one's, it's not like you're like, oh, they've gone off the rails. It's just, they did it again. It's fun and funny and, you know, enjoyable. Now here's a movie that I definitely think you should watch, Skelton. And my friend, Celeste, who always, when she finds a bad movie, she's always like, you got to watch this. And then we have a long conversation where she tells me all the things. So there's a Netflix, this is on Netflix. And I think the year is like 2021 or 2022. But I'm only learning about it now. And it stars, Kristen, Davis, Kirsten Davis from Sex and the City. Is that her name?
She's Kirsten Davis,
the brunette one.
I know who you're talking about.
So it's her, and she's married to the always delightful Dermot Mulroney. Dermot Mulroney, the guy from Career Opportunities, is her, you know, like sad sack husband. And they're like really rich people, and it's a friggin' babysitter movie, and the babysitter, who is played by an actress, I use that term loosely, but it's played by Kelsey Grammer's daughter, who also produced the film. And it's one of these like erotic thriller B movie train wrecks that I love. I mean, I love these.
I think that's an actual category. Yeah.
It's like a Lifetime, one of those Lifetime movies that are about like murder within a marriage sort of, except, you know, it's got a little bit more gore and a little bit more nudity. You might see a nipple somewhere, and you definitely see Dermot Mulroney's buttocks. So there you go. What more could you want? He's got great buttocks. And then just some,
It's like the text that comes up when you start. It's like adult situation.
It's like
Dermot Mulroney's buttocks.
Nudity, sexual, implied rape. You know, it's all those things that like make Todd go, oh, I should probably watch this. It sounds like garbage. And it totally is. But I don't know. I'm a sucker for stuff like this.
What's it called?
It's called Deadly Illusions.
Oh,
what
God.
Else would it be called? Deadly Illusions. But like when I heard, when my friend Celeste was like, you got to watch this movie Deadly Illusions on Netflix, I was like, I'm sure she stumbled on some 90s movie that Dermot Mulroney did, you know, when.
But certainly the title certainly sounds like an early 90s erotic
but
thriller.
But it's like from a year or two ago. So I was like, what? But when you're watching it, it feels like a 90s erotic thriller. It feels like a sequel to Poison Ivy. That's what Hill and I were saying. It's like Poison Ivy or The Crush, you know. It's like one of those kind of movies. You know, it's got the good bad movie stuff. You know, it's shiny and produced like kind of a cable TV movie, and then you know. Awkward dialogue, clunky scenes, actors who don't quite know what to do.
You're really selling it for me.
I really liked it. I like it when people like are in the
I'm gonna rush to my television after the podcast. Yeah,
there's a lot of like eyes glancing off camera when terrible things happen. Like they'll respond and be like, what?
Like they're looking at the crew or
like looking for help off camera. I don't know.
They're looking to see, is it cut? Yeah. Is it?
Oh, is it lunch? And it's also, I mean, it's nepotism at work. I mean, you know, and that's the other thing. Sometimes nepotism at work can be delightfully funny. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wish I had the clout to make an erotic thriller with that lady from Melrose Place and Sex and the City and that guy from Career Opportunities and Young Guns.
Do you think like in the erotic thriller, you would play like the police detective?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That is like trying to figure out who the murderer is.
I'd be the sad sack, like low energy police detective. You know,
who eventually like who in like the, in the, like the third act gets stabbed in the neck by the killer. because he's just figured out who it is.
And as he gets stabbed, he just looks confused. But I'm a cop. How could you do this? Yeah, I recommend that to anyone who loves bad movies, especially bad thrillers, especially bad erotic thrillers. I was a big fan of the 90s thrillers, you know, the ones that came out both in the theaters and straight to video. Because like straight to video, you had like stuff with Debbie Harry and stuff in the 90s.
Yeah, you know, like,
intimate
the theater, the theaters had your Color of Night.
Oh yeah, and your Malices. You ask me if I have a God complex. I am God. Yeah, those things are good. I miss that. So if they're trying to do it straight to video, I'm going to support that. And I think you should too.
Yeah, everyone should.
It's your duty as an American. If you're a patriot, you support this kind of shit. This is First Amendment stuff.
Did you just say First Amendment?
Yeah, I said First Amendment. My neck is hot and I'm drinking tequila.
You got the tequila because, neck.
Well, my
gone.
Neck hurts, so I've got this warming pad on it to try and make it feel better. It is actually helping. But I'm also drinking tequila.
The pad or the tequila?
I don't know. At this point, I think they might be working in concert.
Medical science can't say.
Well, medical science has never known what is wrong with me or what works. I have to figure it out myself. And tonight is a heating pad on my neck and tequila. And we'll figure out the next thing when that comes down the pipe.
We'll see if that holds true tomorrow or if something else needs to be done.
This is incredibly dark, but I was looking up SNL people that I thought maybe had passed. I was thinking of one person and it was like, oh no, she's alive. That's awesome. I was like, so glad to hear she's alive. Why isn't she in stuff? I mean, she's 75, but who cares? But then I looked up somebody else who was my favorite in the 80s was Jan Hooks. And pass away. She had throat cancer or something. But the thing I read was horrible. It's like, they're like, well, we can do this incredibly dangerous surgery and you'll never be able to speak again sort of thing. And she was like, nope. And then in the Wikipedia article, she's like, she found hospice care and treated her pain with prescription drugs, wine, and cigarettes.
Nice.
Oh, and weed. It was weed, wine, and cigarettes. And I was like, you have throat cancer. And then you go with, I'm just going to smoke till I'm dead. Fuck it. I mean, what?
Well, at that point, yeah.
Why not? So I was like, wow, Jan Hooks, that's some Hunter S. Thompson level shit.
Absolutely. Right
there. But I kind of respect it and appreciate it. I know it's dark, but I loved her. She was so fucking funny.
Oh, yeah. She was fantastic.
Brilliant actress. And who was not, you know, was not rewarded the same way the guys were from that era.
Nope.
I mean, the only one who got, like, in movies to the degree that the guys did was Maria Jackson. Why?
Ugh. Yeah,
I mean, Jan Hooks should have been a giant fucking star. She should have been at least Kate McKinnon level at the time. I love Kate McKinnon. Kate McKinnon. Actually, I was wondering the other day, where is Kate McKinnon? I haven't seen her in a while. Do you know?
I don't know.
Because she was in every comedy movie for like 3 years. And then.
That is true.
I haven't seen her much in the last couple. So.
I don't know. Has she been doing maybe like some TV show that we don't have the
streaming service? That's what I'm hoping and guessing, because a lot of times the movie people, when they disappear, they're doing TV shows. So I hope that's the case, but I don't know. I just would rather have Kate McKinnon back in the movies because she was a very good thing.
Yeah.
I mean, even when the movies she was in are like the mediocre things. I mean, I imagine people looking back on Kate McKinnon's filmography, you know, of her early movie era, the same way I look back on like Dan Aykroyd, you know. like a couple of like unbelievably great comic performances in these unbelievably great comedy movies, and then things like Dr. Detroit.
I would absolutely in a second see a remake of Dr. Detroit starring Kate McKinnon.
Fuck yeah. I said that the other day. Like, I randomly, I don't know why we're talking to Kate McKinnon and Rob Schneider at once, I guess because of the SNL thing.
Oh, God.
And the, you know, and I said, but you know what? I would pay good money to see Kate McKinnon in a remake of The Animal. That would be fucking great. Not that I don't know who owns that intellectual property, but yeah. Although I don't want to see Kate McKinnon get hit in the head by an orangutan. I want that joke to be Rob Schneider's. That was good. He got hit right in the head. You remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is good.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Rob Schneider sucks.
All right. Let's say goodnight. I'm Todd Anderson, and I've been here with the wonderful Steve Skelton.
Oh, and we should also, like, RIP to Julian Sands.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, RIP Julian Sands. We knew it was coming, sadly, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have not done my, I usually do, you know, like, my own little wakes as a movie marathon, but I haven't done Julian Sands yet. I think I'll probably watch Warlock and Warlock, yes. Armageddon, and, I don't know, what else should I watch? Boxing Helena.
You gotta throw something in there that is a little more.
I mean, Room with a View, obviously.
Maybe a non Warlock.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta watch Room with a View and two Warlock
movies.
Yeah,
Room with a View, probably. And two Warlock movies.
Well, they're good. All right, so RIP Julian Sands, we're sorry you've left us, have a great afterlife.